This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, in studio by Barnabas Piper. And Pipe, you had a unique NFL fan experience last night. You were able to go to Nissan Stadium and view the last Tennessee Titans preseason game, which, man, I got to tell you, week four of the preseason is just scintillating.
It was a dog of a game, but here's why it's great to go to preseason football games, because I took my two daughters to the game sat on the third row at the corner of the end zone for $75 total.
Yeah, absolutely. StubHub is your best friend for the preseason.
I'm a SeatGeek guy because it shows you where all the good deals are. You know, had an issue with another ticket seller, so SeatGeek hooked me up with some different tickets. It worked out great. You know, so we had this awesome view. It was their first ever NFL game, if you can call it that. It was basically college players. But, you know, normally those seats aren't, well, first of all, they're not available because they're season tickets, or the face value on them is well into the three digits per ticket. So that's why it's great to go to preseason football games. Everything else about them, questionable.
Dude, now as a hardcore football dork myself, like my dad and I grew up going to preseason games because the games were a little bit cheaper and, you know, we could afford to go and have a great experience. And I just love football so much. Like, I enjoy watching the, you know, the late round guys, the free agents, the guys who are on the bubble of the roster. So traditionally I have loved going to preseason football games, but, you know, those experiences were really kind of way back in the 80s and 90s. And the NFL, like, stadium experience, Piper, is very different now. And when we first got on the call, you asked me if I had ever been to an NFL, or if I had ever been to a Titans game. And I went to a Titans game a year or two ago. Now, our seats were a little bit different in that they were about a mile and a half up in the air.
Yeah, the other Titans game, the Vikings played them in the preseason 3 years ago, maybe, and I went to that game. And, yeah, we were, like, fifth row in the top deck. So you can see the whole field real well, but it's a little bit like watching from the Goodyear blimp.
That's it. You can see the field. Like, you can see the expanse of green, but you can't see, like, anything specific on the field. And, like, they had an Air Force flyover the night we were there, and I think the Jets flew, like, beneath us.
Like, you were closer to the Jets than to the players.
Yeah, we could have, like, thrown some popcorn and hit the pilot. But, it was an experience. We were in the building. And you mentioned something off the air that I want you to expand on, which is that NFL games are a lot of shtick now. Like, they've really bought into shtick. You know, one of my critiques of it is that there's not a quiet moment. Like, there's always something blaring at you from a screen. Yes. There's always, like, cacophonous music and ads. And, yeah, it's like leaving your living room to watch a screen that you control to go to, you know, to pay $50 to park an exorbitant amount of money for food to watch screens that you don't control. Expand on all that, Pipe. Tell me what you experienced last night.
So for context, you know, I grew up going to Vikings games. You know, I didn't go to a ton because usually they played on Sundays and that conflicted with church, et cetera. But I went to a handful and they played in the Metrodome at that time. And so, I mean, it was a raucous environment, but it was raucous for the most part because the fans were just deafening. And so they had these key things that they would do. So they had what they called a gjallarhorn, which is this Norwegian word for like a war horn that they blow after touchdowns. And they played Welcome to the Jungle before every kickoff, and they had this this Viking mascot at the time, a guy named Ragnar, who rode in on a really loud Harley.
Yep.
And that was kind of it. You know, there wasn't a lot of, like, you know, make some noise, gong show kinds of things. So transition to about 16 hours ago from the time of this recording at Nissan Stadium. 15 minutes before kickoff, 10 minutes before kickoff, a mechanical chariot rolls out onto the field, blowing steam out the back with two huge unicorn things on the front. So it's supposed to be a chariot drawn by unicorns. And this is supposed to get fans excited because you know who got excited? My 9-year-old daughter, who thinks unicorns are the best thing in the world. And she then spent the next 3 hours trying to spot every unicorn in the stadium. So, I mean, I guess props to them for drawing in a younger fan base. She didn't watch any of the game. Again, then maybe that was a good thing because it was the fourth preseason game. So then they roll out their code of conduct. You know, every stadium does this where usually they run through some rules. Yeah. You know, don't throw things, don't cuss, don't hit people, be kind to those around you. Yeah. But they did it with some faux Garth Brooks lookalike. It was a video singing their code of conduct to the tune of Friends in Low Places.
Wow.
And so, but they have them kind of in different shots around the stadium and around Nashville. So there's a pedestrian walking bridge with a great view of downtown. And there's these poor Titans cheerleaders, like half-heartedly dancing alongside this fat white dude in a cowboy hat singing, you know, be nice to your neighbors. That was maybe the low point of the evening. So, but it was just in line with things. The other thing is the Titans don't have an identity. Like they're a nothing team. And so they've gone kind of all in on the hero warrior theme now, apparently. Mm-hmm. Well, that and unicorns, because those go really well together. So their mascot is a massive, muscled up, looks like you know, one of the American gladiators, wearing like a Roman gladiator thing, but carrying like a Viking axe, you know, like a big war axe. Yeah, and he doesn't really do anything except walk around and be muscly. And again, my daughter's found this fascinating because there's a huge man with muscles. In fact, one of them leaned over and she goes, "Are those his real muscles?" I said, "Well, I mean, yes, if steroid muscles are real, then those are real. He earned them by cheating." Now, on the plus side, being Nashville, the national anthem experience was exceptional because you can't, unless you bring in like Luke Bryan or Florida Georgia Line, you're going to get a good singer singing it in Nashville.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite part of the evening, though, just in terms of gimmicks, was the halftime show was Pee Wee football. So they had four Pee Wee football teams, each playing a different end of the field, essentially running goal line drills against each other. So just running a handful of plays until they scored or turned it over. But those guys were all kept during the second quarter in like a fenced off bullpen on the sidelines, right by the cheerleaders.
Oh, nice. It's a good evening for those guys. Those gentlemen had a fine time.
So there are a whole bunch of just, you know, stunningly attractive Barbie dolls dancing to every pop and country song that comes on, and a bunch of 11-year-olds just gawking in their helmets four feet away from them, which was a source of wonderful entertainment to me. The thing that you made about, like, sort of cacophonous noise, every spare moment of the game, there were no quiet moments. It was filled up with these two huge jumbotrons just blaring different make some noise kind of chants or like the whole I can make your hands clap thing. And it's just there's no chance to cheer. There's not even a chance to see what's going on in the game, like to really pay attention. There's no flow. Yeah. There's no nothing. And it was just overwhelming.
Dude, it's terrible. Like, I feel like I grew up with, and I still indeed have, like, a deep reverence for pro football. Because these are the best athletes in the world doing the most violent thing there is. And, you know, when I would grow up and go to those games in the 80s and 90s with my dad, it was just such a, like, uniquely perfect experience. Like, the Hoosier Dome where we grew up going to games, the Colts really didn't have an identity either. But music-wise, all they played in the stadium was, like, old NFL films, like, soundtrack music. So, like, during warm-ups, it was, like, the, you know, that great old, like, orchestral NFL film music.
You can hear John Facenda's voice over the top in your head.
You can hear John Facenda's voice, and, like, the whole thing was just epic. Like, it felt really epic. They let the athletes and the players be the show in a way that, you know, is really gone. There's all these, you know, loud, lurid, ridiculous things like competing for your attention. I don't know, Pipe, that I'll ever go to another NFL game.
Which is a crazy statement by me. I would assume. So here's the thing. Now, the Titans might not be the best example because I've been to a game at Green Bay. Now, granted that, again, this has been 20 years ago now, but that felt like a very pure football experience. Now, again, to the Green Bay fans who think I'm saying something nice about them, I'm half saying something nice about you. You guys do tailgating and football fandom in the stadium very well. The reason it was a pure football experience is because Randall Cunningham and the Vikings just whooped the jock straps off you, so that was fun. But it's, you know, it's just acres and acres of sausages being grilled and cheap beer being drunk, and there's this haze of smoke, and then you enter the stadium, and they're just raucous fans. I think Kansas City is the same way. Like, there are places with these great home environments. A preseason Titans game is bottom of the barrel.
Dude, so let's stay on this for one more second, and then I want to elegantly transition things into our Manziel minute, because I think things are done differently north of the border in the CFL and a little bit more of a pure football experience. But what do we do about, like, branding for the Titans? Because clearly they're just, like, throwing darts at a board. Things aren't working. I have an idea, and I feel like there's a Titans player that's done an incredible job of, like, branding and positioning himself, and I don't even think he's thought about it, and that's Taylor Lewan. I feel like the Titans corporate should just hand everything over to Taylor Lewan and say, you design the uniforms, you, like, position the team publicly, because what they're doing is not working. Like, a unicorn-drawn chariot is the most ridiculous, like, sad attempt at, you know, getting fans to identify with
something. A single-A baseball team would scoff at a unicorn-drawn chariot, and they don't scoff at anything.
Exactly. So if you're the Titans, why don't you just why don't you go minimalist? Why don't you let the game speak for itself and just kind of see how the fan base responds? It would be an interesting social experiment. And one more thing on the unicorn level, Piper. Did I ever share with you that the team that I played for in France was the Unicorns?
You didn't. Do you still have any gear?
Yeah, I do have gear. I have my jersey. And
do you wear it with pride?
I do not wear it. I do not wear my unicorn's jersey. But see, in Western France, the unicorn is a symbol of virility and strength. And when I first got over to join the team, I made some kind of wisecrack about the unicorn being, like, the mascot. And they looked at me like I was crazy, like I was the one with a problem. And then I realized as I traveled around Western France and saw these, like, unicorn statues from time to time, that this was not a punchline in their culture. This was not, like, a funny sort of little girl thing to be into. And I just got on board at that point. But I just
figured out how the Titans picked the unicorn thing.
How?
They just hired, this is completely made up, but I'm 100% certain it's true. They hired a branding expert fresh out of college who had studied abroad in, you guessed it, Western France, and that person came in and said, guys, I have a really idea how to freshen up this sort of vague two-tone blue nothingness.
That's right.
And it's the unicorn, along with an American gladiator. Like, what could be better than those two things? And the corporate geniuses that they are, they said, absolutely, it fits perfectly in the Music City. It's absolutely perfectly in the Music City.
I mean, there's nothing... That's the other thing, Piper. There's nothing about the Titans approach that is even remotely, like, culturally relevant or interesting. I was talking about this with another friend, and, you know, we were texting back and forth during a Titans preseason game, and we were like, oh, these uniforms, they're unwatchable. And we realized, like, the whole three-star logo on the Tennessee flag actually has some legs. Like, why not incorporate that? Why not call your team the Tennessee Stars, which would be a tip of the cap to, like, Nashville's music heritage? You can incorporate the three-star logo from the flag, and it would be a really kind of elegant, cohesive thing that wouldn't be ridiculous.
And it would represent the entire state, because those stars are supposed to represent the three different segments of sort of the unique sections of the state in West, Middle, and East Tennessee. I mean, there's a lot going on there that's positive. The team that does it well is the Nashville Sounds, because they're all in on the music theme. Like, they are the Sounds, the Sounds of Nashville, and their scoreboard is a gigantic guitar. It's perfect. And they're a minor league baseball team, so they can be a little more stickish, but their colors, black and red. So, again, not embarrassing. The Titans have done absolutely – I mean, they have followed the NFL's lead in doing every marketing thing wrong.
They really have, man. They've done literally every single marketing.
They also just decided to claim a slogan that means nothing.
What's the slogan?
You know they have the annoying guy who runs around with microphones and interacts with fans. You know they're gonna do like
dude, that guy's the worst. That would literally be the worst job on the planet.
In this case, he looks just like a church planner, shaved head and beard, which is very fitting for Nashville. But
dude, I feel like everyone in Nashville looks like a church. You could call the Titans the Tennessee church planters,
the Tennessee planters,
and give them
that might feel a little bit agricultural,
like a dark denim like game pants. with a plaid jersey.
A plaid jersey. Yeah. And the logo is just a beard on the side of the helmet.
The logo is a beard, exactly. Like the face mask is a beard.
But
you know?
Every interaction with the fan ended with, "Give me a big tighten up." You know, yeah. So, and every time I hear that, I think tighten up as opposed to loosen up. And I'm like, why do they want everybody to tighten up? I don't understand. And then I realize it's tighten up. I'm like, that means nothing. It sounds like something that just some dumb drunk dude yelled one time, and they were like, "Ooh, that's the slogan right there. You were going to tap into the fan base. That guy liked it. We're going with it."
Dude, the ineptitude on every level of that operation is really staggering. And you know what? Like, it's going to take a Patriots level of success and dominance on the field to counteract the sadness at every other level. And one more note on this. I have to say this before we leave this topic. Our uniform in France. So we were the Saint Brieuc Licornes. So Licornes is, I guess, the French way to say unicorn. Our uniform was sweet. We had like a University of Michigan color scheme. So like a maize and blue. You know, really simple like maize colored pants. Our jerseys were white with like USC stripes on the shoulder, and it just said Licornes in like block dark blue with a good looking number. The helmet was like a dark Michigan blue, yellow, like a gold face mask and like a really fierce looking unicorn on the side. With the words,
say that phrase again, fierce looking unicorn. Yeah.
It's hard to say it without laughing, but at the end of the day, the uniform was way better than the Titans. Our cheerleaders were way better than the Titans. Like they were just these sweet like French girls with like a really traditional like cheerleading uniform,
and they actually cheered instead of just sort of being, you know, vague sex appeal on the sidelines.
Everything about our game experience was better than the Tennessee Titans, even though we only drew like wives and girlfriends to the game for fans, but still it was a great experience. Tip of the cap to the Saint Brieuc Licornes, if any of them are listening. It was probably the best experience I've ever had in football. But Piper, speaking of people who are having experiences in professional football right now that may or may not be going well, and also that are taking place in predominantly French-speaking locales, it's time for our Manziel Minute, and we need to catch up with one Jonathan Manziel. Talk about his fortunes for the upcoming week. Now, I did read, Piper, that Manziel is off concussion protocol. He will be in uniform as the backup to a quarterback named Antonio Pipkin. And here's the curious thing about Antonio Pipkin. He played at Tiffin University, which is in Ohio. Very small school. Used to be NAIA. Now it's NCAA Division II. And the crazy thing about this is that Pipkin has played really well in the last 2 weeks in relief of Johnny Manziel. So Johnny's back, and he finds himself in the same, you know, predicament that he was in earlier this season in Hamilton, in which he's the backup to a guy whose game has really kind of taken off. So
Mr. Pipkin has, like, what kind of a quarterback is he? I'm just going to reveal my ignorance here. Not real familiar with Antonio Pipkin as a football player.
Dude, I do. Yeah. Antonio Pipkin, like the best way to describe it to me is that he's a poor man's Cam Newton. He's an athletic quarterback. He's bigger. He's thicker. Not as elusive as Johnny Manziel, but he's got good arm strength. He can whip the ball down the field. He can keep drives alive with his feet. He's just playing well, and he's not doing stupid things. He's not turning the ball over a whole bunch. He's keeping a really bad team in games. And, you know, not to say that he's better than Johnny Manziel, but, you know, maybe for where that team is right now, he might be. You know, he's not trying to do too much. He's an interesting player, and he's kind of one of these guys that Montreal was just cycling through quarterbacks. I think they've had like seven quarterbacks play this season already. So they were just kind of throwing darts at a board at that position. But Pipkin has played well. It'll be interesting to see if our man Johnny can reclaim that job at some point this season.
So in terms of football culture in the CFL, I need a little education here. So in the NFL, your goal is to get a quarterback. Who was your quarterback for like 12 years? You know, you want to get them so they're starting by their earlier mid-20s and they play until their mid-30s at the, you know, kind of you want that stretch of their career. And if you can get that guy, you're likely to be a playoff team because that consistency means quality. Does that happen in the CFL or is there a ton of player turnover?
Dude, it does happen in the CFL. So the best quarterbacks in the league right now, Mike Riley with Edmonton, he's been in the CFL for a long time. Ricky Ray with Toronto has been in the league for a long time. Bo Levi Mitchell has been around for a long time. So these are guys that are sort of elite, you know, quintessentially CFL quarterbacks who have been in that league for a while. But that being said, they change teams quite a bit. So I'm not sure exactly how the contracts work. One of the interesting things about the CFL is that they don't publish player contract information. So, one of the charming things about it is that not every conversation is about like payments and how much a player is getting paid and holdouts and, you know, all that stuff happens kind of behind the scenes in the CFL. So, I think it's elegant and I think it works because it gives the fans another reason to not resent the players, you know?
Yeah.
If you're an NFL fan.
And given recent goings on in the NFL, that's rare.
Dude, it really is. I mean, players are easy to resent for a lot of reasons in the NFL, but you know, holding out for an extra, you know, $4 million on top of your already $80 million contract, like there's not a whole lot to relate to there.
And just the standard, like, so Odell Beckham just got paid. You know, he becomes the highest paid wide receiver, broke the record, until the next guy gets paid. Quarterback's the same way. The sort of perpetual expectation that I should be, like, I will not sign a contract until I'm the highest paid player by either average per year or total contract. And the players are dumb because what they should really be looking at is total guaranteed money because that's all they're going to get paid anyway.
Yep.
And the whole thing is just dumb because you inevitably end up with, like, 4 years with Joe Flacco as the highest paid quarterback because he was the next guy to get paid. You're like, Joe Flacco shouldn't be the 20th best paid quarterback. Like, he should be, you know, bottom five in terms of paying according to talent as opposed to paying according to time frame.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, it's ridiculous. And that's why that market is so screwy. And I mean, Oakland is really in a similar situation with Khalil Mack, who, you know, Khalil Mack, great pass rusher, obviously, you know, ascendant young talent in the league. But I mean, pass rushers are kind of like running backs. You look at their performance over time and it's like they get old fast. You know, I think offensive lines figure them out. I mean, as dominant as Clay Matthews Jr. was at one time, you know, he's sort of regressed into, I mean, he's just a guy at this point. You know, he's a guy
lot of that was coaching though, because they took about 3 years of his prime and put him at middle linebacker because who was it?
Dom Capers
is just a moron. Yeah. Like he was
Dom Capers is committed to like, you know, defense that's as boring as possible.
Which as a Vikings fan, I have to say thank you to him for because Clay Matthews was a scary player and then he became a completely irrelevant player.
Yeah, let's take our most ferocious edge guy and move him off the edge. So if you're the Raiders, you know, you've just drafted Arden Key, who has some upside as a pass rusher, pennies on the dollar compared to Khalil Mack. So, I mean, the dilemma is, do we pay this guy a king's ransom in hopes that he turns into Von Miller? But in the back of our minds, maybe we're worried that he's going to be Alden Smith. You know, he's going to have a couple of transcendent seasons in this, and then, you know, kind of fall off for one reason or another. So, all that to say, the CFL is sort of delightfully devoid of those sorts of stories, and that's why I like it, man. That's why I keep watching it. So we'll hope that Johnny Manziel gets back on the field. But, Piper, we have more hypothetical business to discuss, and that is our fantasy league. So the official Happy Rant Keeper Auction Draft Fantasy League, the draft is in the books. It was exciting. Let's get into it, Pipe. So let's talk.
Can I preface this section real quick by just saying that Ted and I are both aware that nobody gives a crap about our fantasy football teams, and we don't give a crap about your fantasy football team, but this is our podcast, and we love to talk about all things football, including our fantasy football team, so, you know, here we are. This is not something that we are not under any illusions that you are fascinated by how our draft went, but we're going to talk about it anyway.
And we're going to do it in such a way that we invite the listener in, and we give the whole conversation context such that the goings-on in our draft can sort of be related to by you. And also the players and the scenarios that we talk about will hopefully be entertaining and helpful to you in your own fantasy football lives, in your own pretend fake football lives. So this is nothing if not manifestly practical. So, Piper, let's talk about the draft. Let's first talk about team names, because I feel like you have settled on one that you're really that you're really excited about. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, so if listeners will remember the last episode, we were workshopping some names. I insisted that it be built around the image of Randy Moss fake mooning the Lambeau crowd, so ideally working in the name Randy. Ted threw out some suggestions. We texted a few things, but those were a little bit off-center for the Randy core of the name.
Yeah.
But again, just good to keep the creative juices flowing. We get to our draft, and, you know, it's an auction draft, so guys are getting, you know, picked up here and there and here and there, and I was needing a receiver. So after I'd filled, you know, some key spots, I ended up bidding higher than anybody else to get Adam Thielen, who is the Vikings either number one or number two receiver. They sort of have 1A and 1B with him and Stephon Diggs. So I get Thielen, which I'm excited about as a Vikings fan. I'm excited about as a fantasy football player, but I'm especially excited about because Thielen is the perfect pun word.
It really is.
You can be hooked, you can be hooked on a Thielen. You can be Thielen real good. You can be a lot of things. But my team is Thielen Randy. That's what it's feeling. So
there it
that's
is.
The that is the team name. I'm Thielen Randy, and yep. and I'm just at peace with that. I feel good about it, and I'm ready to rock and roll.
Man, good for you. Congratulations, Pipe. I know that was a long journey to get you there.
I had confidence we would arrive on something. I mean, I had good people speaking into it. You know, yeah. The team names that you and Tristan came up with were an inspiration. And so when I acquired Adam Thielen, it all just coalesced.
You know what? That's really a picture of the church, I think, as iron sharpens iron, you know,
So one pun sharpens another.
That was the crucible you were in for a while as you were trying to get there with a fantasy team name. But, you know, this is not to brag, but I think you and I and my son have the strongest names in the league. You know, with the exception of our contest winners, they've done a very good job. But the rest of the landscape there, name-wise, is pretty unremarkable. You know, there's nothing that really sticks out to me. So.
We ended up not mentioning those names in the last podcast, but I think we can give them a quick mention and we should move on from them quickly. So it's not to risk offending anybody. One of them is a play on the name, Zach Ertz, and it is just my ball, Zach Ertz. So congratulations to that. That's hilarious. Moving on. The other one was, what was it?
Don't stop Talibing.
Don't stop Talibing. A wonderful play on the name Aqib Talib, who is one of the most eccentric and delightfully moronic characters in the NFL.
Oh, absolutely. One of our favorite NFL idiots. So that name jumped right off the page to me. And congrats to those two contest winners. We're going to look forward to having them in the league. But speaking of the league, Piper, how did you feel about your draft? So I'm looking now at the league page. And there's a little sponsored award called Best Draft that went to your team. I'm Thielen Randy took home the hardware, the trophy for Best Draft. So Piper, talk us through your draft. Talk us through how you're feeling about it. And then I've got some mixed feelings on my draft.
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, some context for listeners who, again, don't care, but here we go. It's a deep league, so there's 12 teams, and then we have deep rosters because we have our standard starting lineup with quarterback, wide receivers, running backs, tight ends, but then we have three flex positions, including one that can be a quarterback, so it can be a two-quarterback league. So
that's crazy, man. I've never played in a league like that before.
It's,
so
So the guy who I co-commissioned this league with, a guy named Brandon, who I've been friends with since freshman year in college, he and I have played a ton of fantasy sports together, and we've just gotten to the point where we realize like shallow leagues are not fun because everybody can – you can always pick up a starter to replace an injured player. Deep teams makes it a challenge. It means you have to be on the ball with waivers. It means your sleepers really matter. The back end of the draft can win you a league. Nobody wins a fantasy league in the first eight rounds. You win it in the last eight rounds. So we did that.
Can I ask you a question vis-a-vis Brandon? So this is going to be a little digression, but then we'll get back on track. Could you describe for me Brandon's college persona?
Brandon's math major. And he is a
smartest guy in the room. Was he that guy?
By intellect, he was always on the high end, but not by persona. He was a quiet, fairly reserved. I mean, so introverted guy, but always had a good group of close friends. And so he's the kind of guy who, when he's in a context where he knows people, he'll make fun of people. He's hilarious. Really, you know, plays on words. Really dry sense of humor. Will absolutely go in on someone. But like in a big group, he's going to be sort of a quieter, you know, off to the edges kind of person. Just not the center of attention by any means. Loves, you know, he's one of these guys who, when he loves something, he goes all in. So he's a sports guy. So he's a freelance, he does all sorts of freelance things, but one of the things he does is freelance sports writing.
Interesting.
But he's the kind of guy who's really fun to talk to because he loves the stuff as opposed to trying to be smarter and out argue you. I was more that persona, like just the total douche who wanted to win every argument. Brandon liked to participate in arguments, which was a little different.
Interesting. Yeah. So he was the one who was really like behind the majority of the trash talk during our draft. Like, I think if he had not been a part of our draft, there would have been like little to no trash talk. There would have been some banter. But he and my 15-year-old son actually really got into it on draft
night. To be fair, 35-year-old Brandon did not know that your son was 15.
He only
knew that it was Ted's son, and he knows you well enough to be like, well, Ted could be between the ages of like 38 and 55, so he could feasibly have a college age son who, you know, making fun of a college age person is a little different than a 15-year-old.
Dude, totally. And I was fine with it. And like just to paint the picture for the audience, so Tristan's my son, we did the fantasy draft in my home office, and I was at my desk, and there's a sofa in my office that he was sitting on, and I would see this trash talk pop up. We were both on our individual screens, and I'd just be like, dude, let it go. Dude, let it go. Dude, let it go. Dude. And my son is like, he's like Marty McFly in Back to the Future. Like if somebody steps to him, he just can't let it go ever. And
I like your son. I like your son for that reason. That's hilarious.
Absolutely. So he's trying to come back at your like ultra clever, smartest guy in the room, Wheaton College graduate, aged like 40. And I'm just like, dude, let it go. But it was fun. It was fun to watch. Tristan enjoys that stuff. And back to your team, Piper. I'm looking at your roster, and your roster is fascinating to me in that you've got Cam Newton at quarterback, which I know you love Cam Newton. He's a freak show of an athlete.
Let me explain the Cam Newton pick. So I do like Cam Newton, but here's the other thing. Their scoring in this league gives points for first downs. So it's because there's in fantasy nerdery, there's been a rise of we should give scoring for first down because it adds value to players who otherwise don't really fit. So like short yardage backs, running quarterbacks, possession receivers, things like that. And so we added that to this league. And so Cam Newton goes from being, you know, he's probably a top 10 quarterback. He, you know, he could feasibly be quarterback one. He could feasibly be quarterback like 13. You never really know.
Yeah.
But when you get the first down stuff, he is the Panthers' short yardage back. So
yeah, he really is.
That's why. And then I also think his receivers are just remarkably better this year than they have been the last two or three years. So I expect an uptick in passing as well.
Yeah, no doubt, man. That was a good pick. And he's risky in that he's one concussion away from being on the shelf, you know, for a while. But you've got a deep bench. You know, you've got Dak Prescott behind him. You've got the great Jameis Winston there on the bench. If he can get through the first 4 weeks, might have some upside. What are your key concerns with your roster, Piper?
My biggest My biggest
as I look at it, it looks strong. But yeah, what are your concerns?
So in an auction, there's usually there's sort of two different ways of going about it. And a lot of the guys in our league went for the one style. I'm almost always the other. The one style is you spend like 90% of your budget on four or five players, and then you fill in the rest of your roster with low budget guys later on. I went the other way, which is to be more conservative spending and target key players. So I went way in on David Johnson at running back because I think he's the guy who I think is going to have the best fantasy year. Now, could be Le'Veon Bell, could be Todd Gurley, but I'm betting on David Johnson. And then the rest of the guys were all kind of even money. So it's a deep team, but not a ton of superstars. My biggest concern is that I don't like my running backs. I don't hate them. I just don't trust them.
Yeah.
So David Johnson makes me nervous because he's a health risk and because Arizona is bad.
Yep.
Alex Collins.
They're bad. They're going to be throwing a lot. Yeah. Alex Collins, I actually like. He's one of my favorite picks of yours. You know, he's looked good in the preseason. I think Baltimore is going to run the ball well and run the ball a lot because of who their quarterback is. And I don't know. I think Alex Collins is actually a nice, you know, a nice little sleeper.
Yeah, I mean, if he was 1,100 yards and 8 touchdowns or something like that with another couple hundred receiving and a touchdown, then all of a sudden he's a decent running back too. I feel good about that. And then I got Lamar Miller as third string / flex, and he's another guy who if all things are clicking on their offense, he's going to be a valuable weapon. But he could also get 400 yards, 2 touchdowns, and be completely worthless.
Dude, he really could. That's definitely like the floor is low with Lamar Miller. And it's kind of astonishing to me that Lamar Miller is still Houston's starting running back. I feel like they've, for the balance of their history as a franchise, they've had like Lamar Miller-esque running backs. And
It was Arian Foster for about 4 years was just
that's true.
A
I forgot about the Arian Foster era. Yeah, and he was a monster.
He just matched up perfectly with what Kubiak did back then.
Yep.
And then he just got too many injuries and you know was done.
Exactly.
Other than those, like I don't have a ton of concerns. My other biggest concern is like besides David Johnson and Cam Newton, I don't see a ton of guys on my roster who I'm like they could put up a 50-point week.
Yeah,
there's going to be a lot of like there's going to be a lot of 15 to 22 point weeks from other guys.
Absolutely. And yeah, there's not a lot of guys who you know are going to be consistent. You know, Devin Funchess could have like 2 catches for 9 yards from time to time. OJ Howard at tight end, I mean that offense could completely go off the rails.
My tight ends are garbage. I've got him, and then I've got George Kittle from San Francisco, and that was a total flyer because I'm like, well, Garoppolo has to throw to somebody,
dude. And Kittle's explosive. He's a great athlete. There's been a lot of hype around him. He could be a nice player. So let me tell you about my chief roster concern.
Yeah, your roster is more interesting than mine. Mine is just sort of steady. Yours is intriguing, especially because you drafted a bunch of guys who I hate.
Yeah, exactly. And I drafted a bunch of guys that I love. Like, everyone on my roster I like for some reason. So I went full-on emotional, sentimental. My concern, Piper, is that if it were 2009, my roster would be amazing. Unfortunately, it's 2018. So I have...
Breaking news.
Breaking news, it's 2018. Matthew Stafford is my quarterback. So Tristan and I had a little strategy going into the draft in that our two favorite quarterbacks in the league are Matthew Stafford and Tom Brady. So he's a huge Pats fan, so he wanted Tom Brady. I told him I would get Matthew Stafford just to keep like our two favorite guys in the household, so to speak. So Stafford is my quarterback. I'm actually excited about him. I think he's always going to get numbers because that team is never going to run the ball. So he had 4,400 yards passing last year and almost 30 touchdowns.
And that was a low year for him because I think he'd gone over 5,000 the two previous years.
He did, yeah. He's always going to be a numbers machine. So that I feel good about. I have Larry Fitzgerald at wide receiver. I have deep, profound respect for Larry Fitzgerald. He's one of these interesting guys who is like moved from the outside into the slot as an older player, a la Anquan Boldin. You know, he's kind of retooled his game. He's like an old Michael Jordan at this point. He's like post-up Michael Jordan. And I still love Larry Fitz. I hope there's something left in the tank there.
If Bradford plays for half a season, that's a big if. Fitzgerald is going to – he and he – those two are perfect for each other. as players.
They really are.
I don't think Bradford can do that because I think his knee is shot. But Fitz has a chance to have a pretty productive year.
I got Allen Robinson at wide receiver just because I wanted a Chicago Bear. I have no idea how that's going to go. But my guess is not well, given that Mitch Trubisky is the quarterback and it's the Bears. But I wanted a Bear, and I got Allen Robinson. Now, the guy that I overspent on Piper for sentimental reasons is Leonard Fournette. He is young. He is a huge back, a downhill guy. He embodies to me like everything that's right about football, but it may have been a bad fantasy choice. So all my running backs, Piper, they're all created in my image, in that they're all 235 pounds, will knock your block off, but nobody's catching a ball. nobody in that backfield is catching a football ever. So I may need to like make some moves at running back so that I can have a little bit more diversity
here's,
in my offense.
Here's the thing, though. With that first down scoring, so let me run through your running backs for listeners. So interesting. Leonard Fournette, LeGarrette Blount, Marshawn Lynch, and then on your bench you have Jeremy Hill and Ronald Jones from Tampa, who
Tampa total flyer. I overspent on Ronald Jones.
Well, here's the thing. This is a keeper league, which means that you keep them at the value you paid for them this year plus a little bit of money next year. So Ronald Jones, I don't know, would you pay for him like $6?
That $6.
He could be a starting running back for you at like $11 next year. That could be an awesome pick.
And he could be good. I loved him in college, so that was kind of why I went in on him. But
so all of those guys though are the short yardage backs for their team now. You know, you get guys, you know, you have a Fournette. He's the everything back for that team. And they got rid of Chris Ivory, which means I was just listening to a podcast earlier that was talking about how Ivory stole like 8 of his goal line carries last year.
Yep.
That's probably 2 to 4 touchdowns, you know, if assuming that the rates are all the same. So that's a lot of first downs that you're going to get out of those guys. So that makes up for the catches that they won't get to a great degree. So in a normal league, I think that's a dog of a running back group. In this league, there's some decent upside there.
Dude, but they're all guys I love. I love LeGarrette Blount.
Which matters so much because it means you can root for your fantasy team. Like, for example, I really needed a quarterback. Big Ben was being bid on, and it was at a pretty good value, and I almost went in on him, and I could have gotten him. And I was just like, you know what? I can't root for Big Ben, not putting him on my team. I need a quarterback who I can be happy when he does well.
Exactly. So my other concern is I spent big money on Rob Gronkowski at tight end because I figured, you know, my receiver room is a little bit meh. I'm gonna spend some cashish on Gronk, who I love. I love Rob Gronkowski. I love him when he's healthy. He's one of the most interesting matchup nightmares in the league. But here's the problem. He's going to be injured by week 4. And then I'm probably not going to have him until, you know, the playoffs maybe. So I know the deal with Rob Gronkowski, but I drafted him anyway. The receiver I'm intrigued by, Piper, and we're probably disagree on this because of disagreements we have about John Gruden, I'm guessing. Amari Cooper, I think, has huge upside. One of these Alabama receivers had a really nice start to his career, kind of tailed off last year. I think John Gruden is going to rejuvenate him, and I got Amari Cooper really cheap. I got him for, relatively speaking, a steal. And I think there's some upside there. Your thoughts?
I think the money you paid for him is exactly the right like that level of pay was exactly right for a guy who he could be a top 5 wide receiver in fantasy this year easily. You know, so he could be like a 1,300 yard, 10 touchdown guy. That's very much within the realm of possibility. He could also be a 700 yard, 4 touchdown guy like he was last year, and that's just it's a total crapshoot. Because nobody knows how Gruden's going to play. The same is true with Marshawn Lynch. Like, is Marshawn Lynch going to get 120 carries this year or 280 carries this year? One of those is going to be a top 10 running back. The other is going to be, you know, LeGarrette Blount from
just
last
a guy.
Year.
Yeah,
I don't hate Cooper. I can only go in on so many risk-reward guys. And you have Cooper, you have Gronk, you have Marshawn Lynch. You have
Josh Gordon.
Josh Gordon, who is the one
who I'm super excited about.
I almost went in on him as well because he's just the most freakishly talented wide receiver in the NFL physically. Not the most productive, but just the most. Because I mean, last year he came back for what, 3 or 4 games. He put up 100 and a touchdown, fresh off the street against professional football players. He's nuts.
Yeah, he really is, man. He's ridiculous. And I wanted Josh Gordon. I wanted some Browns because I'm intrigued by the Browns.
Yep.
The other Cleveland Brown that I got is Baker Mayfield, number one overall pick in the draft. I think I got him for like $2. I'm excited with my young quarterbacks pipe because this is a keeper league. I got Josh Rosen for $1 right at the end of the draft. I feel like one of those guys is going to pop. Now, one of the guys that I'm super excited about, deep sleeper-wise, is Anthony Miller, wide receiver, Chicago Bears, freakishly productive at Memphis, set all kinds of records in college, was a walk-on at Memphis, but really, really good player, really polished route runner. I'm excited about what he might potentially do in that Chicago offense. So
yeah, I had to grab. The Chicago offense guys scared me because I don't –
Yeah, with good reason.
I don't know what to – I mean, new coordinator this year, that's probably a positive. But is Trubisky decent or is he like – is he going to be the next Mariota where he's a high pick who just – he's always exhibited potential but 5 years in is still like, he should be better than he is.
I honestly see him that way. I think 4 or 5 years in we're going to be going, Mitch Trubisky, do we give him another contract or what? Which is exactly what's going to happen with Mariota, you know. And he's going to get the next deal just because if you're the Titans, you're going to look at the landscape and go, well, what are our other options?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Mariota's been a disappointment. And we hate to talk about him in those terms because, you know, he's a good kid and he's had some explosive moments. But at the end of the day, yeah, it's tough to get
too excited. And he's not a bad quarterback. He's just the level of quarterback play. Like, he's now the floor of starting quarterbacks instead of the middle class. You know, 3 years ago, he was sort of middle class. Now, that production is that's bottom quarter of the league production.
Exactly. And he's joined at the floor of the league by Jameis Winston, you know, same draft class, number one overall guy. A Tampa guy that intrigues me, Pipe. I'm friends with his agent, Chris Godwin. Wide receiver. I think he's beat out DeSean Jackson in Tampa. I got him for pennies on the dollar toward the end of the draft. I think he's a guy that could end up – my bench, honestly, receiver-wise, they could all end up starting and being way better than the starters that I picked. You know, Larry Fitzgerald could get old. Allen Robinson could be a Chicago Bears receiver. Amari Cooper might flounder under John Gruden. We don't know. But this bench could end up being – really high upside with Miller, Josh Gordon, Chris Godwin. I think he's going to have a nice season. So it'll be interesting to see
what happens. I really liked your late grabs of those rookie quarterbacks for sure, because especially in a keeper league, you know, they will – one of those guys – you know how Carson Wentz as a rookie kind of didn't do anything, but then his second year was MVP until he blew out his knee. I don't know that either of these guys are that good, because Carson Wentz might be sort of – you know how there was – you know, there's like Andrew Luck, there's Carson Wentz, there's these guys who are just, they're a step above. But they could easily be Josh Rosen, you know, where rookie year they struggle a little bit, and then second year all of a sudden they're very productive. I could easily see that out of either of those guys.
Yeah, for sure. Piper, is there anybody in our draft that you really wanted that you didn't get?
Not specifically. I would have liked... I look at my team and I think I wish I would have gotten one more elite player. So just like my wide receivers are Adam Thielen, Demaryius Thomas, Devin Funchess, Jamison Crowder, Mike Williams from the Chargers.
Which I think was a brilliant pick, by the way.
I mean, Mike Williams might be an elite player. That's the thing. He's sort of my Josh Gordon, you know, injured last year, elite quarterback and big play guy. So I just look at it and I'm like, I don't think that I'm going to get massive weeks out of any of my receivers. You know, a massive week for Demaryius Thomas is like 130 and 2 touchdowns. That's a good week. But that's not a Julio Jones big week. That's not an Antonio Brown or Josh Gordon big week. So,
and that Denver offense scares me in the same way that Tampa's does. In that, you know, Denver might have lost faith and given up by week 4 of the season. You know what I mean? Their season might be over like 4 or 5 weeks in. In which case, who knows what happens to Demaryius Thomas? You know what I mean?
The reason I picked up Thomas is partly because he was one of the only good receivers left on the board, but also because he reminded me of – so watching Case Keenum play last year, who is now Denver's starting quarterback, Demaryius Thomas is what Adam Thielen was for Keenum last year, which is essentially the big guy. You throw it near him, and he just – he can make contested catches and he can make something happen after the catch. So he's not he's not the best deep threat. He's not the best possession guy, but he's a chuck it up and let him find the ball, kind of beat the defensive back into the ground, which is what Keenum needs. So I think he could have some big games. I'm not overly excited about him though.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, man. It really does. Piper, I know you've got a hard out at 10 o'clock, so we probably need to land the plane on this episode. But do we have time to talk about Barry Sanders'
college production? I think we have to, yes.
That was unbelievable. You texted me a screenshot of Barry Sanders, game by game, his last year in college at Oklahoma State. Barry Sanders, obviously legendary Hall of Fame running back for the Detroit Lions, played on a lot of bad Lions teams, but put up ridiculous numbers in the league and had a great career. You compared his numbers, his last year in college, with the top rushing game by any running back in college football week by week through last season. And it was astonishing. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I Barry Sanders is one of my – he was probably my favorite football player ever to watch and top two or three favorite players of all time. It was like him and John Randall and Randy Moss. And so there was this great article recapping, because it's the 20-year anniversary of his Heisman season at Oklahoma State. So just recapping how he got there. So it's this amazing sort of pseudo-oral history of how he went almost unrecruited out of high school at, I think it was Tulsa North. So, at this time, Barry Switzer and Tom Osborne were in the Big Eight or something like
that? Yeah, Big Eight, exactly.
And they missed him. And he would have been, imagine him running their offenses, that veer offense, that option offense. And they missed him. So Oklahoma State picked him up. They already had Thurman Thomas. So he waited in the wings for another NFL Hall of Famer to go. So then I think he was a junior, he starts. And so here are the total numbers for the best week from last year of any Power 5 running back. So cumulative numbers, 2,836 yards and 27 touchdowns. So that's game by game, week by week, best performance by a Power 5 running back. 2,836 yards, 27 touchdowns. Here are Barry Sanders' numbers from his 1988 season. 2,850 yards, so he beat it by about 15 yards.
Wow.
42 touchdowns. Huh. He had what? 4 games of over 300 yards, another one of 293 yards. In that era, that was like elite passing numbers.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's insane. He beat the cumulative best running backs from last year by 15 touchdowns.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. I mean,
you use the term video game numbers. I think a video game would be like, you need to stop playing on rookie mode if you put up these kind of numbers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and that was a real guy against real defenses. You know, they played real defense in the Big Eight back then. It's not like the Big 12 today.
This was like the Nebraska black shirts. This is Oklahoma.
Dude, Nebraska black shirts, Oklahoma when they had the Boz. I mean, these are real players. Like real players on real defense.
Texas A&M held him to his worst game of the year, and it was 157 yards and 2 touchdowns. Well, actually, Missouri, he got 154 and 2, but I think he only played like 2.5 quarters.
Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. Transcendent talent, Barry Sanders. Tons of fun to watch in the league. Go ahead, Pipe.
I was going to say one last comment on that article for listeners. It's at ESPN.com. You can just go find it. Just go look up Barry Sanders. There's a highlight video of his high school. It's his high school highlight video. And it was sort of mythical for a while, but they dug it up. It's Barry Sanders. You've seen it. But him doing those things to like 140-pound defensive backs, just cleats and just people strewn everywhere. It's bonkers. And the crazy thing was how much more athletic he got when he got to Oklahoma State, because he ran like a 4.56 coming into college and he ran a 4.38 coming out.
Yeah.
And so he was just a monster.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, he really was, you know. And it interesting that the Lions were never better with him. You know, the Lions were bad for a lot of reasons in that era, but, you know, I think he was a guy that, while he always delivered numbers and like sensational highlight runs in the league, you could never really build an offense around him. You know, it was just an interesting career there in the league, and you wonder what would have happened if he had wound up on a better team. I mean, what happens if like he's in Miami with Dan Marino, and that team has a little bit more balance during that era? Or what happens if he ends up in San Francisco instead of Roger Craig? You know,
yeah.
How do things change there? But a lot of what ifs with Barry Sanders.
Yeah, I feel like he's the kind of running back who could play in most systems, because he was a better pass catcher than he got credit for. But yep. He also just you couldn't build an offense around him. But if he had been plugged into a decent offensive system, man, imagine the play action off of him, just how everybody, they'd be so scared of him, the gravity that he had as a player. I mean, who was the best quarterback he ever played with? Scott Mitchell?
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Eric Kramer.
No wonder they weren't good under him.
Yeah, exactly. No, it is no wonder. And, fascinating career, man. Played in the old Pontiac Silverdome on the AstroTurf, and was a huge favorite of mine as well. Piper, you are 1 minute away from your meeting. Let's get a quick book recommendation, and then we'll wrap this episode.
So I recommended this on the last regular Happy Rant, just kind of in conversation, but I'm going to recommend it here as well. It's a book by Michael Lewis, so the same guy who wrote Moneyball and The Blind Side, two great sports books, but it's called Coach. And it's a short little book, almost like a vignette of him honoring his high school baseball coach. So this hard-nosed coach who made – his goal was to make men. And, mm-hmm. you know, how that guy has struggled over the years to adapt to parents who are getting softer and softer and don't want their kids pushed. And mm-hmm. so it's in typical Lewis fashion, brilliant storytelling. But it's short book. You can probably read it in an hour or two. But it's just called Coach by Michael Lewis. It's fantastic.
I love it, man. Mine is a Detroit Lions book, Paper Lion. Early immersive journalism, early creative nonfiction. George Plimpton, one of the great practitioners of that craft, went undercover in the 1963 Detroit Lions training camp as a quarterback. Some incredible characters, just incredible things going on in that book. So the book is Paper Lion, and I love it, and you should check it out. So, Piper, we have wandered to and fro throughout this episode. Until next time, Josh Gordon.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate.
Are you concerned about tensions in the Middle East? Do you wonder where we're currently at in the biblical timeline? Are we really in the last days? Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Carl Muller with the Inside the Epicenter podcast. Every week, my co-host, best-selling author Joel Rosenberg, and I answer those questions and more. You'll hear inside knowledge of our meetings with leaders at the highest levels of government in the U.S., Israel, and the Middle East, equipping you to filter the news with biblically sound insights. Find Inside the Epicenter on your favorite podcast app, or go to joshuafund.com to listen and subscribe.